Hello, welcome to the Most Dangerous Podcast. How are you, James?
I'm all right. Good evening. How are you?
I'm okay, yeah. I'm okay. Like last week, I've done nothing.
Have you not?
Well, it's been the Easter holidays and, you know, I've had to take some time off work. So when I say I've done nothing, I've done stuff with the kids. Nothing interesting.
Yeah, standard stuff. So yeah. I can't remember the last time we met, but I went to the Yorkshire Dales the other day.
You did? You sent me a lovely picture of you holding your kids on bits of string in the wind.
It was bloody freezing and it was blowing a gale, but it was beautiful, to be fair. I don't think I've been up to that part of the world. I must have been, surely, but not for a long time.
We've been a couple of times. We've done a couple of these caravan park holidays, Park Dean, those sorts of places, but, you know, I've not really explored it too much. But
this was it was like a youth hostel thing.
Yeah.
So like the YMCA. There was like a couple of Indians dancing around, and, you know, and all the rest of it. You know, like builders and stuff singing the YMCA. Mm-hmm. But we stayed in like these kind of like, they're like tents, but they're made of wood. So it's like a pod. It's got electricity in there, but not much. Yeah. It's got like a little heater, which needed to stay on full blast because it was fucking freezing. And there's like two beds and a mattress on the floor with no telly. So I got there and I was like, right, okay, yeah. Where's the telly then?
Shit.
And then my missus was like, nope, no telly. And then I went into like the actual building because like that's like the YMCA thing. That's like a building with like a sort of bit where you can cook food and things. I was like, where's the telly there then? And no telly. So I didn't have telly for like 24 hours.
That's devastating.
It's going a bit mad. Yeah, I need a screen to sort of keep me sane. And also, do you know, like, I don't know, I imagine most of our listeners are in the UK, but those B roads, man, they are scary as fuck. Like, you know,
oh, they are
the single lane, and like you're driving up these roads. There's like these big, like people have got bigger cars these days as well. So
yeah,
you know, they're driving down like 40 miles an hour towards you in these big Mercedes, and I've only got like a little small kind of Honda. Mm-hmm. I'm just like, and every time something comes near me, I'm kind of sort of pulling over and like pulling myself down to like 15 miles an hour, and they're just whizzing past me. It was fun, but I didn't enjoy the drive.
Yeah, they don't give a fuck, the big cars, do they?
No, you're moving.
I loved when I drove my big transit van, the big 8-seater thing, because people just fucking move for you. Because you're like, I don't care about damaging my car, so you know, it's up to you. But we toured.
Did you?
Nah, we toured Ireland last summer, and you think our B roads are bad? God,
it's just you're taking corners like literally blind, though. And
I know,
and like this is right up in the hills as well. So you're going over like a ridge almost, and you can't see the other side. So you just kind of, and plus it's mine's like a 1.2 or something.
Yeah,
so it's kind of like your foot's like down to the metal, trying to get over this hump. For all I know, there could be like a tractor coming direct like the other way.
Yeah.
Oh man, I enjoyed being there, but God, it was like 45 minutes
stressful
purely on these roads. Yeah, really. I've got like two kids in the back. I'm like, shit.
I love these country roads where you're driving along and you can see a tight corner in front of you, and the corner goes tight to the right, but straight ahead there's a big hole in the hedge. People have obviously at some stage not turned the corner.
Yeah,
country roads, God.
Take me home.
So we've got a busy night tonight, James. I've got a long story, a short story. We've got your news. I also want to give a shout out to an old friend of ours I've touched base with again recently, a chap called Bill Angove. Do you remember Bill?
I remember Bill. Hello, Bill.
Bill's another devoted listener that's joined up to listen to our podcasts. And
right. Excellent. Yeah. We are recruiting them, aren't we?
I know.
Maybe we could start an army.
This has actually been our most successful week since we started the podcast, James. So, yeah, we've gained quite a lot of Facebook followers. So we'll do the socials now. Follow us, Facebook, Most Dangerous Podcast. YouTube, The Most Dangerous Podcast. That's growing again. We're on TikTok and Instagram and all the other lesser ones, you know. So, but anywhere you look, it's The Most Dangerous Podcast, and you must know what our logo looks like by now.
Excellent. Have we got any money yet?
No, I'm still I'm still well out of pocket on this venture up to now.
I work loads, and I'm always skint, and I sleep loads, and I'm always tired. I don't get it. Is that like just being an old man?
It is, yeah. I think that's what happens when you pass that 40 mark.
Yeah.
Everything starts just going downhill. I've got a limp, and I don't know why I'm limping. I don't know what bit of my leg's sore, but I've got a limp. So I think I'm going to have to get a cane or something.
Oh, okay. But they're pretty cool, though, canes, aren't they?
Yeah.
You get a cane and a fedora.
You'll be a fedora, yeah.
If you like paranormal, true crime, and some cryptids, or just anything weird, check out Ouch, Was That a Ghost? Brought to you by your host, Liz. You can find Ouch, Was That a Ghost? On Spotify, Apple, or any audio platform. New episodes drop every Thursday.
All right. Well, thanks very much, Liz. That was Liz from Ouch, Was That a Ghost? That's a podcast that we listen to and we really enjoy. I know we've been in conversation with them. It's lovely to hear from people from over the pond. Anyone who's listening, please bob over to Ouch, Was That a Ghost? It's a great little listen. I'm sure you'll enjoy it.
It's a fantastic podcast, actually. I think I first listened to it because they did a podcast about something I wanted to do a podcast about. So I listened to their version. I thought, God, that's actually really good. And I think I ended up not doing the podcast.
Because you'd be embarrassed. You'd be embarrassed by your poor quality compared to theirs, I imagine.
That's it. And I thought, God, I can't do that. But yeah, they did one last week about a creature called the Squonk, which was quite good fun. That reminded me of mine about the Drop Bears. It was a bit of a kind of cryptid creature.
A squonk.
Squonk, yeah.
Right, well, don't spoil it, because I will go back and listen to that one.
I won't spoil it. And I listened to tonight, just while I was basically getting prepared for this podcast, I listened to one that they did called The Bloody Benders, which it was a bit something different to what I thought it was going to be about.
The Bloody Benders,
yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it wasn't what I expected. It was actually about a family in the 19th century America, quite a grim tale really, but it was only a 15 minute episode, one of the shorter ones, and it was a really good listen. I enjoyed it.
Wonderful. Check them out. Thank you, Liz, for speaking to us, communicating with us. We love it. Keep on listening, and we will definitely keep on listening to you. Yeah.
Thanks very much. Now we've got to move on to your little bit of the show tonight, the dangerous news.
Okay, so in tonight's dangerous news, we have, for the first story, a horse at a station.
A horse at a station.
So commuters at a train station in Australia were left doing a double take as an escaped racehorse joined them to wait for a passenger service train. The rogue animal turned up at Warwick Farm Station in New South Wales. He trotted down the platform and paused to wait for the train's arrival.
Wow.
Apparently he even stood behind the yellow line. Footage shared by the Transport Police for New South Wales shows shocked commuters stepping back as the horse made its way past just before midnight on the 5th of April. So what appears to have happened is a horse has escaped from a local farm and somehow managed to make its way into Warwick Farm Station and then just stood there on the platform.
Oh dear. Did I have a ticket or...?
The Transport Authority did see the funny side of this, and they shared an update of the incident on Facebook. In a post about a missing individual, they wrote, "He was reported to be wearing only a rug and demonstrating a bit of horseplay." There's a bit of a dad joke in that one.
There is, yes. That reminds me, we used to take our standard poodle Teddy up to my granny's flat in Springburn. 20 stories high up in a building, and you weren't allowed dogs in the building. and we took them up a couple of times over a couple of months, and the newsletter went round the building. It was like a quarterly newsletter, and there was a report that this standard poodle was seen arriving every Friday night in a big blue Volvo.
Like, it sounds like he was driving.
Well, it was written as though this dog was turning up, you know, in a suit and a hat, smoking a cigar, yeah, going up to visit someone's flat. So, yeah.
He was a big dog, though.
He was, yeah. Beast.
So, yeah, I mean, there are photos online. You can find them. It was a racehorse. So it's kind of like, you know, it's got had that kind of sort of coat thing. You know,
over
its back. So it looks like it's wearing like some sort of clothing.
Well-dressed horse. Smart horse.
Yeah, smart horse, yeah. So, second story tonight. Very animal-orientated. A rat in a toilet. So, a 76-year-old man narrowly avoided death.
Death? This week.
Yeah, after being bitten by a diseased rat found lurking in his toilet bowl.
Shit. When did he last clean his toilet?
Well, do you know, rats and mice do come up through toilets, if you didn't know this.
No.
Because I had one in my work once, and it was fucking horrific.
I remember you telling me that. Wasn't it like Christmas Eve or something? Or
No, it wasn't Christmas. I think it was winter. I think we weren't sure whether it came up through the toilet bowl or whether it fell out, because the window was just above the toilet, so we weren't sure whether it kind of climbed out through the window and fell in, but he couldn't get out.
Yeah.
Which we had to get Rent-A-Kill to come over. So anyway, the unnamed man from Montreal, Canada, was rushed to hospital after the rodent bit two of his fingers whilst he tried to fish it out of the loo.
Ah, see, that's a better scenario than it could have been.
Yeah, and it could have been his balls, I suppose.
Yeah.
he was given a tetanus jab at hospital, and then he was sent home. But 18 days later, the man was back in hospital, having experienced severe fever, headaches, and abdominal pain for several days. So although the wound had mostly healed, the man's blood pressure was low and his heart was beating extremely fast.
What the hell?
Initial blood tests showed that the patient's kidneys were damaged, and that his blood had a low number of... I'm not going to say that. I can't say it. Initial blood tests show that his kidneys were damaged.
Permanent damage, or?
Kidneys. I don't know. Like, you know, possibly.
I suppose it's 76. It's like scratching a 20-year-old car, isn't it? You're not really that bothered about it.
They're probably already damaged anyway. So the man was admitted to intensive care. And he was found to be suffering from multi-organ dysfunction and sepsis.
Shit.
Yeah, sepsis is dangerous, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, it's just blood poisoning, basically, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. So his immune system was in overdrive.
What the hell?
It was eventually discovered that he had contracted an infectious disease called leptospirosis. I think that's how you say it.
Well said.
Didn't take me a few times, but never mind. And this was believed to have been transmitted to him by the rat bite, obviously.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. So the man was given antibiotics as well as other treatments to address his kidney damage. And after a few days, his symptoms improved. And he was just discharged from hospital. So a happy ending.
Yeah, it's good that he recovered. I mean, at that age, these things can be really dangerous, can't they? You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, fair play.
So, yeah, don't always check the toilet before you sit on it.
Yeah.
So I'd say.
Definitely. I mean, he's at the age where your balls go right in the water when you sit down, you know, so.
Well, that would have been horrific. Yeah. A bloodbath.
I know.
So, a lot of stories were, I was going like doing sort of looking through stories this week, and a lot of them were pretty animal heavy, but I came across this one and it reminded me of, we did that episode about the, oh, no, it wasn't about the cheese rolling, but we've had an episode where we did about cheese.
And
the one about the cheese rolling. So this is quite similar, like a sort of quaint tradition type thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in Paris. So waiters and waitresses have raced through the streets of the French capital for the first time in 13 years. But the only difference is they were balancing a tray with a croissant, a cup of coffee and a glass of water on it.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a competition to find the fastest competitor of Paris's cafes and bistros.
Wow.
That's a few weeks.
Sorry.
So this was a few weeks back, actually. It was on the 24th of March. So it's not that new, but, you know, whatever. The 110-year-old event was held for the first time in 13 years, and it was being used to promote this summer's Olympics, which is also being held in Paris, as you know. It's 1.25 miles long, or 2 kilometres, and it basically celebrates the men and women who work in the French cafes and bistros.
So, James, if they're running with this tray with the coffee, water and croissant, I assume part of the rules is you can't spill or drop any of it?
Yeah, that's absolutely right, yeah. So there's about 200 people who take place. They dress up in their uniforms, their work uniforms, and at the end of the race, they're judged on how quickly they finish it and then also how much liquid they've spilled.
Right, okay. So it's like penalty points.
Yeah, so good guess. So this year, the female winner was Pauline van der Vemisert. That's been completely murdered there by me, but I'm sure it looks like that. And the bloke who won it was Sammy Lamarousse.
Lamarousse,
yeah. So Pauline, because I'm not going to say her surname again, so apologise. She was the runaway winner. She won the women's category in 40 minutes and 12 seconds.
What the hell?
She works at Le Petit Point Café. This is a restaurant facing the Notre Dame Cathedral, if you ever want to go.
I believe they've rebuilt that now, haven't they?
Have they finished it? Finished.
Well, yeah, they're getting there.
That was awful, that wasn't it, when that burned down? It was devastating. Mr. Lamarousse, he won the men's race. It took him 13 minutes and 30 seconds. And he works in La Constricarpe, whatever, in Paris's 5th district.
Yeah.
So the prizes weren't bad, actually. So they were rewarded with medals, you know, the usual. Standard medals that you get when you finish these things. 2 tickets for the Olympic opening ceremony.
Wow.
Each, that's good, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And then a night out in a Paris hotel.
What the hell?
I don't think, not together, I don't think.
Just the two of them.
I think they got their own hotel. It's not a bad little prize, that.
That's all right. I mean, for a 15-minute run, really.
Yeah, well, and you've got to balance your stuff. But, I mean, if you've been doing it for years...
Yeah, you should be good at it.
Should be all right, isn't it? Yeah. So that's this week's news.
Thanks for that, James. That was fantastic. Some interesting stories. So, James, have you ever heard of a lady called Violet Jessop?
No, can't say I have. Jessop's is like a camera shop in the UK, isn't it?
Is it cameras? No, not related.
No.
So Violet Jessop, she was actually working as a stewardess on the White Star liner, the RMS Olympic.
Now, Olympic. I've heard of the Olympic.
Yeah, so the Olympic and the Titanic, the famous Titanic.
Yeah. Well, I've definitely heard of that one. Yeah. I'm not sure about Titanic.
Now, they were built basically side by side in the docks in Belfast.
There's a bit of a conspiracy about the Olympic and the Titanic, actually.
Yeah,
my 10-year-old daughter told me about, which was a bit weird. Getting into conspiracy theories when she's 10.
It's like the old story how Paul McCartney died and the Sgt. Pepper's album was like his funeral. It's mental.
So I've heard both of those.
Yeah, so basically Violet Jessop, she was on board the Olympic in 1911. And she was on board when it collided with HMS Hawk. So basically the ship crashed into another ship. It was a little bit of damage and stuff, but it managed to make it back to port without sinking.
Right.
So basically the Olympic was out of action for a little while because it had crashed. So Jessop was actually transferred to its sister ship, the Titanic.
Jesus. Was the Olympic, because I don't know that much about it. It's only what my daughter told me. So the Olympic was also a passenger cruise liner type thing where... So it wasn't like a battleship or anything.
No, it was exactly the same. A lot of the photographs you see of the Titanic are actually the Olympic.
So that's why.
The Olympic was used like the Titanic for a few years, and then the war broke out, the 1914 to 1919, the Great War, the First World War, and the Olympic was stripped down to then be used during the war.
Got right, and, I see. So that's probably where I've got a bit confused. Yeah.
And it just remained a sort of cargo ship and stuff during that war. And
it's funny how you said that the 1914 to 1991 broke out, not like World War One.
Yeah, I suppose they didn't know it was World War One then.
Well, they didn't think there was going to be another one.
No, I know. So she got transferred onto the Titanic. And I'll keep this story relatively short. We know what happened to the Titanic. The Titanic hit an iceberg and it sank.
Yeah.
And poor Violet Jessop, that was the second boat she'd been on. It had crashed, it sank, and she survived. She was one of the survivors. Yeah.
Wow.
And then during the First World War, she actually became a stewardess for the British Red Cross. And on the morning of the 21st of November 1916, she was aboard the HMS Britannic, which was the younger sister of the Olympic and the Titanic.
Can I just take a guess on what's going to happen?
And basically, this was, again, pretty much the same ship as the Olympic and the Titanic. She was on board in 1916 when it hit a German naval mine and it sank within 55 minutes, killing 30 of the people on board. Obviously, Jessop survived.
Of course she did. She's bad luck.
I know.
Don't go on a boat that she's on.
Jessop, I mean, she survived. She got a traumatic head injury. And when she described the scenes she witnessed, she just said the white pride of the ocean's medical world dipped her head a little, and then I'll just take that bit out. So that's just a wee short story about Violet Jessop. And I looked into this story and I thought, wow, this woman's actually survived all three of the crashes of the White Star Lines.
Yeah,
and wow. Can you imagine surviving the Titanic? And I actually thought, credit to her, she actually then went to work during the war on the Britannic.
Yeah, you'd have like post-traumatic stress disorder after being on the Titanic, surely. Well, even like the first one, you'd be like, like Mr. T, like, I ain't getting on no boat, fool. Like, he was plain. He was more like, he didn't like planes, did he? But
no.
You'd be like that. You'd be like, I'm not getting on another boat. Like,
yeah.
But then all the other crew would be like, well, I'm not getting on a boat with her.
True, yeah. I mean, because after the second one, you would be like, fuck that.
There's a bit of a... What happened to her afterwards? Any news on that, or did you not bother getting
She continued to work into, like, the 1950s on, you know, as a nurse, and she just got on with her life, and...
Really?
Yeah, she died an old lady in her 80s.
Wonderful. Well, a shout out to her, apart from all the boat sinking.
Yeah, I did look into it and I thought, there's a dangerous woman. She's been on all three of the White Star ships. and I thought, can we do a pod out of that? And I thought, nah, it's just not enough, you know. But I just wanted to give her a mention, that's all.
No, good shout. All right, there's Mrs. Jessop. Thank you.
I'm Sam Rossi.
And I'm AJ Carey.
Join us every Wednesday as we summarize and discuss true crime on Killing 15 Minutes.
That's right, 15 minutes or less on some sick puppies, serial killers, and criminals. Every Wednesday.
I write it, AJ reads it. Available on all major audio platforms.
And please follow us on all major social media outlets as well.
All right, Sam and AJ, thanks very much for getting in contact with us. That was Killing 15 Minutes. So if sometimes podcasts can get a bit sort of like, they can be a bit long, can't they? And you just don't, you know, you sat there and you're having to stop and start. The kids are playing up. Well, I found this like really good because all the pods are about 15 minutes roughly. So it's just like a little quick shot of the arm. And it's really interesting. Really good listen. It's anyone listening to us, please jump over to Killing 15 Minutes. It's run by Sam and AJ, brother and sister, I believe.
They are, like the white stripes.
Fantastic. Yeah, well, thanks very much for getting in contact with us.
Yeah, it's been a good pod. Like you said, it's one of those things like, you know, when you're doing a wee job, I keep mentioning I've got a big family, so folding, washing at night, you know, that's like a 15-20 minute task. It's a good podcast to throw on. You listen to a really interesting, but, you know, quite horrific story, some of them. Yeah. That just, like they say, kills 15 minutes. So it's absolutely a good show.
You could cook pasta to it.
Yeah, yeah.
But and then that's probably a bit too long for pasta, I think. Cook pasta and then put your sauce in. And by the time you've done that, you've made your dinner and listened to that to a podcast as well.
Yeah, throw a bit of cheese on it, stick it under the grill.
How good's that?
Okay, James, so we've had the short story about Violet Jessop. Like I said, I just wanted to throw that in there. I thought she deserved a mention. I thought it was an interesting little story, but it's not the main theme of tonight's podcast.
So I don't even know what we're doing this week because you refuse to tell me, and I'll be honest with you, mate, you kind of been doing me head in a little bit this past week, just constantly texting me, pecking my head going, oh, I can't wait to do this pod. Oh, it's going to be great. It's going to be great. I might be bigging it up a bit too much, actually.
Possibly.
I'm intrigued. Let's go.
Well, I think it's going to be so great that I got a little backup story about a woman that had sank on three ships, just in case this was actually quite short and shit. So it's an incredible... It's one of those stories that, again, I think, what the fuck? Right, should we start?
I've been waiting since Saturday to hear this, so let's go.
At least, yeah.
Better be good.
So, right, I want to take you back to 1950s, okay?
Right.
And you won't remember because you weren't alive, but during the 1950s, there was a thing known as the Cold War, where America and Russia were basically trying to see who had the biggest nuclear bombs and see who would blink first.
Yeah, it was a cock measuring contest, basically.
It was, yeah. And you know, I actually think about see all the wars and all the sort of stuff that's gone on. I think that time round about 1950s must be one of the most terrifying times, where these two big boys basically had these nuclear bombs, and people in America and people in Russia and probably a lot of people around the world were like, one of these is going to blow one of them up, and we're just all going to melt.
Yeah, no, that's kind of
horrific deaths.
Yeah, no, I agree. It was like then up to like the 80s, and then it kind of went away for a bit, and then now as well.
Yeah.
I've seen things in like, you know, like the sort of late 70s, early 80s.
Yeah.
And like the government in the UK were actually issuing pamphlets like what to do in a nuclear strike. So, you know, around the threat was real. It wasn't just, you know, you can read about it in books and things. And we say this every week on the pod, like,
yeah,
it's really difficult to put yourself in the context of the time. Mm-hmm. But from what I understand, because like you say, I wasn't there at the time, from what I actually understand, yeah, the threat was real. Like, there was a potential nuclear strike sort of any day of the week.
Definitely. And, I mean, now we kind of know that Britain and America and Pakistan and China and France, Russia, probably Iran, but they pretend that they haven't. All these countries, they've basically got nuclear weapons basically all pointing at each other. But I think one of the sort of safe things nowadays is I think countries are all so reliant on each other that they'll never actually fall out to that degree. Like, if
They're all a deterrent, aren't they? So,
yeah, yeah.
Like, no one can use one on another because they'll just be instantly annihilated by the other.
Absolutely.
So that's why they're all there. So Russia have got all these bombs pointing at America, USA, potentially the UK. Who cares? I don't think anyone actually cares about the UK. We pretend we're like this big country, but yeah, maybe the UK as well. Mm-hmm. But then USA and us as well, if we've got a nuclear deterrent, have got bombs pointing towards them. So as soon as Putin presses that big red button,
yeah,
the moment he presses them, you know, the intelligence is there. So everyone else around the world just goes, right, okay. Which is, I think, is more scary because of essentially what that leads to is ultimate annihilation.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, it's just just flattening the earth. Mm-hmm. It's not just like one bomb going off like it did in 1945, you know, in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, yeah. You know, because America had the power then, whereas now it's everyone does. And as soon as one crazy bastard presses that button, that's it. Everyone, you know, it's rockets flying through the air. That's it. Game over.
The only people alive were those three people working in that post office in the South Pole.
See, did you apply for that? I was thinking about it.
The wages were actually really low for what it was. I did think about it, but it was like, no, I'm not doing it for that.
You're not going to spend much when you're there, though, are you?
No. So, during the Cold War, when it was whose bollocks are bigger than whose, there was also a thing called the Space Race.
Oh, yeah.
Yep, the astronauts and the cosmonauts were basically squabbling over who was going to get into space first, which the Russians actually did. They were ahead in the space race, but the ultimate aim was to land on the moon.
Yeah, who put the dog up there?
Oh, it was the Russians. I'm sure the Russians put the dog up, yeah.
So like the space race was basically like, we've got these nuclear missiles. Mm-hmm. Why don't we strap people to them and see how far they can go up into the air?
Absolutely. So yeah, so The USSR, as it was at the time, they were sort of surging ahead of the space race, and the Americans came up with this truly bizarre plan, which was known as Project A-119. Have you ever heard of that, James?
No, I don't think so.
Project A-119 was the Americans' plans to nuke the moon.
Bloody hell, right. Do you know, I know that we've had a couple of shout-outs to our friends over the Atlantic,
yeah,
right, and the podcasts. But why do, like... I don't have to put this into words without offending anyone. Why nuke the moon? Just, why is this, like, this gung-ho attitude over there? Just like, fuck it, if they can't have it, it's fucking going.
Like, that's what I was thinking. It's like, right...
If they're going there, they're not going there because it won't even be there by the time they get there.
That's a little bit like, right, my boy, Murray, you all heard his voice a couple of episodes back when he told me to rotten brioche in his bed. Murray asks me to play Mario Kart with him all the time. And when I play Mario Kart with him, now he's autistic and he's a gamer, so he's pretty good. But there's the odd occasion where I get in the lead, and as soon as I get in the lead, he switches the PlayStation off, or the Nintendo, it would be even... He switches it off and he goes and does something else. And that's, in my opinion, the Americans were like, the Russians are going to get to the moon. Let's blow it up so they can't.
If you're going to win, you're not going to win because I'll make sure that you can't win because there'll be no finish line.
Absolutely.
Do you know, I did read, well, I read half. It was a huge novel that I tried to sort of wade my way through. I need to get back to it. About the impact of on the Earth if the moon was destroyed.
Well, I've got a few notes on that.
Oh, really?
A few notes on that, yeah.
It wasn't a happy novel, let's just say.
I'll bet, no. So, basically, the motivation was supposed to be that what they want to do is basically demonstrate the Americans' technological prowess and deterrence capability by sending a nuke all the way to the moon and blowing it up so it could be seen from Earth. And the proposed project was a hydrogen bomb, which was significantly more powerful than the one dropped in Hiroshima during the Second World War. So you can imagine this sort of thing they're sending to the moon. Yeah. And they wanted to detonate it near what's called the Terminator Line, which is the boundary between the light and the dark side of the moon.
Any particular reason? Is that just...
They decided that was the place that would be the most visible from Earth if it blows up.
Oh, really? So it was a status thing.
Yeah.
It was just like, that's not going to cause the most destruction. It's just that, look at what we can do.
Basically, yeah. Yeah. In their sort of notes, there were sort of other things, like obviously they can see what it's like when a nuclear explosion explodes in lesser gravity in the vacuum of space and these sorts of things, you know.
That would be interesting, actually. I wonder what... You might not. You probably wouldn't know this bit off piste. But what would happen if like a nuclear explosion went off in space?
I don't know, but I know I've watched certainly a sci-fi film. I don't know if it wasn't Aliens. It was one of these types of films where basically to get to light speed, the ship sends a nuclear explosion out the back of the ship to propel it forwards. I can't remember what film it was, but it was one of them. So
if it was a film, it's definitely true.
Definitely true, yeah. It was like, remember that film where they drill into the middle of a meteor. And they let off a nuclear
Armageddon. Yeah,
that,
yeah.
That's a nuclear bomb that they use.
It was, yeah.
Bruce Willis is clinging to it when it blows up.
Sad, that film, isn't it?
I know. That big lad from The Green Mile's in that as well.
He died.
Did he die in it?
Yeah. No, not in it. In real life.
Oh, he died in real life, yeah.
But I think, did he die in it? Everyone died in it, didn't they? No, apart from people on Earth.
Yeah.
Everyone on the ship died in it because they blew themselves up.
They did, yes.
There you go. So you don't need to watch it, though.
Yeah, we spoiled the film. Interestingly, James, there were actually rumours that the Soviets had cottoned onto it and they were considering a similar scheme codenamed E4.
It's like,
it's like this two is why kids.
It's like, right, we're going to get to the moon. No, you're not, because we're going to blow it up. No, you're not, because we're going to blow it up.
Basically, yeah. But the Soviets actually abandoned their plan because they'd had a couple of rockets that they'd sent to the moon that had failed and fallen back to Earth. Right, and the Soviets thought, right, if we stick a hydrogen bomb in the end of a rocket and it doesn't make it and then starts falling back towards, you know, Moscow, we're in a bit of soapy bubble here. So the Soviets, apparently, they abandoned their plans.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of a sensible thing to do.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, Project A119. Despite concerns about the environmental impact on the moon and such as contamination of the lunar surface, the project proceeded with its planning stages. So this was a
really, they were like seriously considering it.
They were quite far down the line, but I think one of the things they actually looked at was, you know, they were also trying to fly to the moon. So what if they nuke the moon and then they fly there and die of radiation poisoning because they've just nuked the thing?
Yeah, well, there'd be no moon left.
Yeah, so, I mean, it was inevitably cancelled in the end. The Americans planned to nuke the moon.
It's just ridiculous. Like, oh, no, well, actually, let's scrap that idea. I'll tell you what. Let's nuke the Russians instead.
Well, we only actually, do you know, we only found out about this in the mid-1990s. And there were three scientists involved in it. There was Leonard Riefel, Carl Sagan, and Gerard Cuvier.
And Leonard Riefel. Is that the American fella?
Yeah. And apparently we discovered about the plan when Sagan's involvement was discovered in the late 1990s when he put in an application to a university and mentioned the project in his application. It was on his CV.
Hobbies, trying to blow up the moon.
That's it, yeah. We tried to send a nuke to the moon.
It's like some like super villain, isn't it? Like, isn't that like the plot of Despicable Me 3?
Something like that.
He tries to steal the moon.
Yeah, he tries to steal it, doesn't he? But this thing was all real. The Americans were actually going to nuke the moon.
That's just insanity, though, isn't it? And that makes you worry about the people that are in power, because I'm sure there's things like this that go on in the background.
Yeah,
that we will never hear of, we'll never know anything about. And it's like, this is only, I suppose this has come to light in the 90s because of, I don't know, like a limitation act, statute of limitations or something. They've released the records and stuff. But then there are things where, like, well, you mentioned the guy who was on his CV, weird. but there are like things where, like the Kennedy, you know, JFK, assassination, I think, like Trump said when he was in power last time that he was going to release the papers on that, and then he had a look at him and went, nah, probably best if we keep them sort of low key. That's the rumor conspiracy, probably. So it's kind of weird. So there's all this stuff going on in the background that nobody ever know, will never know about. Or
absolutely,
and it's kind of worrying when it's stuff like, we're going to blow up the fucking moon, right?
Well, there's a couple. Do you remember the film? Have you seen National Treasure: Book of Secrets? And it's all about this book that the American president has. And
I've seen it because there's a few of them, isn't there? I've seen the one where they try and rob the Declaration of Independence.
That's this one.
Is it the same one?
Yeah,
is it?
It's the same one, and he kidnaps the president and stuff. But like, there's this story that there's this, each president gets handed down this book that only the president sees, and it's got the story about what happened at Roswell, and it's got what happened to Kennedy and all these stories, and the next president and writes in all his shit, you know? And I think that, you know, it's a fictional film, but I think there probably is stuff like that. It's probably a little bit like, right, you're president now, you get to know this stuff.
You get to know this top secret stuff that no one will ever know about,
I know. But
where's my tinfoil hat? Hang on.
But it's scary. I remember Billy Connolly years ago, he said, was it Boris Yeltsin at the time? He said, this guy, he's like 82 and he's got his finger on a button. But if he pushes it, the world will end. He says, my dad's 64 and we don't give him the remote for the telly. You know, it's like these guys, I mean, you look at some of them and you're like, there's people younger than you that are too old to drive.
Yeah.
You're running countries. So yeah, so that, I mean, that's the little, I've got more to this because I looked into, like you mentioned earlier, and I thought about it and I thought, what if things had been different and the Americans or the Russians had blown up the moon? What would actually happen to the world? And this is how dangerous it was. The tides are actually controlled by the moon.
Yeah.
So the moon disappears, there's change in tides. Change in tides, massive, massive issue for a lot of the sea life, and also coastlines and everything like that. There'd be mass flooding and all sorts going on. Not going to drag on. Climate change. The moon is actually responsible for the tilt of the Earth, and I actually looked this up, and it's like a 22 degree tilt
because of the gravitational pull, I suppose, from the
absolutely.
I suppose it's only ever so slight. It's such a small body.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
And that gives us summer, winter, northern hemisphere, southern hemisphere, all that sort of stuff. And basically, if the moon wasn't there, the Earth would actually tilt to a further degree, and it would make half of the Earth in permanent winter and half of the Earth in permanent summer.
Yeah, I bet the permanent winter would be the UK, wouldn't it?
Oh, definitely, yes.
Are you sure the moon is still there? Because it feels like we're in permanent winter.
Permanent rain. So I mean, that would obviously have massive, massive, like, implications on life on Earth.
Well, because there'd only be half of it you could live on, I suppose.
That's it.
So imagine the mass immigration, you know, the reduction in crop produce, you know, farming and things like that. So there'd be a 50% reduction in livestock and crops, I suppose, because
it'd be even more though, because the side that's in constant summer, they would struggle to grow crops because they wouldn't have the rainfall, they wouldn't have
the sun would just be burning down,
so, day and night. There'd be no night. Well, but that's not true, because the moon actually impacts the Earth's rotation. But what the moon does is it slows the Earth's rotation down, so the Earth would actually start rotating much faster. So days would become shorter, nights would become shorter.
So do you know how, when you say much faster, because science, much faster in science and space is different to much faster. Like for me, much faster is 20 miles an hour to 50 miles an hour. But
yeah,
have you got the measurements there, space-wise?
I haven't got the measurements there, but you're talking like over a million years. It would make quite a
sense. So it'd take a while.
Yeah, it's not within 3 weeks, we'd all be flying off it because they're spinning so fast.
Yeah, right. Okay, so get a day, like an hour of daylight and then night.
And then again, night cycles, the country that's the part of the world that's constantly in darkness, you know, animals that rely on day and night to go to sleep, hibernation and stuff, wildlife would all die. So yeah, in summary, James, the disappearance of the moon would have far-reaching consequences for Earth's climate, ecosystems and human civilization.
Did the USA not think about this, though? There must have been scientists sort of running around the Pentagon going, what the fuck are you doing? Like, this can't happen.
Well, the truth is, they would never have really sent a nuke up there that would have destroyed the moon. The idea was what they wanted to do is they wanted to create, because all the craters on the moon have been created millions of years ago and they're full of dust and stuff like that. They thought if they create this big, massive crater, then essentially it would be like blowing up a mineral mine, so that it would create this big crater and then they would have a decent access to what the moon's made of and stuff like that. They'd be able to
a
fresh man-made crater and they could investigate it and so on. But obviously there's the issue of radiation and stuff like that. And but what one of the main things that actually made them cancel it is they realized actually we might be able to get to the moon. So let's send a man up there instead of a nuclear bomb.
Let's try that instead.
Yeah. First. Yeah. That would, I think they looked at it and they thought, if we nuke the moon, that's going to make us a lot less popular than if we put a man on the moon.
Yeah, but like I said at the very start of this, like essentially it's just people strapped to nuclear bombs anyway. So if you can get a nuke up there, just put a man in it or on it,
and then
it's going to get there anyway. I imagine, So that's the thing. So I watched this film, right, with Ryan Gosling, and it was based on Neil Armstrong. I can't remember the name of the film now. And essentially, it's just the story of the first moon landing.
Right.
And like, I think we look at it again with our eyes going, well, you know, the technology's there. You can just get to the moon and that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what a lot of people don't think about is, this is just like such a dangerous, dangerous, dangerous mission. It must have been so frightening for those astronauts, like, to go and sit in that space pod and basically go, right, okay, we're strapped to a nuclear weapon here, literally, and we're going to be shot into space at a million miles an hour. You know, I've got kids at home, you know, I've got a family.
Mm-hmm.
We might make it. No one's ever done it before. You know, we might get there, we might explode halfway there, you know, and it's just so, I find that story like fascinating. And like I said, it's Ryan Gosling's in it. I think it's just like called Armstrong or something like that.
Yeah.
And again, like I said before, like, I think we just take the context out of it because of where we are today in terms of technology and stuff.
Yeah.
But it's just like, you know, it's a tin pod whittled together with some nails and stuff, and they're just gone, right, see you in a bit. Hopefully.
I was gonna say, I've seen photos of it. It looks like something they made in Blue Peter. It's got like tin foil and shit like that.
And it's just absolutely insane, and it's such like an incredible feat, like, just to get there. Like, I'm desperate. Apparently they're sending some more people up there, like, in the next couple of years, and because I think it's happened in our lifetime, and I'd love to see someone go to the moon again.
Well, yeah, because they'd have much better technology, cameras and stuff like that. And
yeah, you know, I mean, there's just fuck all there. Like,
I know
there's nothing to see there, but it's just the idea of that space travel, particularly that first time. And imagine that family, like Neil Armstrong or Buzz Aldrin's family, and Michael Collins was the other guy, all sat there watching it on the telly, going, "This is my loved one." At any moment. Like, it's got to be so precise, because at any moment the whole thing could just go literally kaput. Like,
yeah,
it must have been terrifying.
I think you'd rather, I mean, blowing up is probably the best thing that could happen to you, because imagine something goes wrong, you're just drifting off into space and there's
like engine failure, and there's no way of, like, and you're just spinning off into the abyss.
Yeah, like, you're like, I mean, that, we're just here until we die. Should we try bombing each other to see what it's like? Or
no one's gonna find out.
Yeah, what should we do? No, but like, do you know, I'm glad you said, what was the guy's name, Michael Collins?
Yeah, that was the guy that stayed on this ship. Right.
See, I'm glad you said that, because I was gonna make the point that no one knows his name. Most people don't know his name.
Most people, there you go. That's why I'm here, fountain of knowledge.
Because I didn't know his name. But like, I think he's got the shittest job, because like, he's taken all the same risk as the other two guys, but he basically just has to sit behind the ship while they go and get all the glory. Yeah. They're immortalized. Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin, everyone knows them. Everyone knows them.
Yeah, but you've got to remember the other guy.
Yeah. What's his name? Michael Collins. Michael Collins. Everyone write that down.
Let me just double check that.
But like, he must have been at that point the furthest away from anyone else in the human race. Because the other two were on the moon and everyone else on Earth.
Yeah, and he's just in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, big shout out to Michael Collins.
There was a guy on the International Space Station. I think he was the only one up there at the time, and he took a photo of Earth. And someone said, that photograph's got everyone that exists in it apart from you.
Yeah.
Because everyone was in the picture apart from him.
Apart from the other people on the other side of the Earth.
Yeah, true.
Right.
That's my little pod. I thought it was interesting. I thought it was exciting about the Americans nuking the moon.
It was. I just don't even... I'm lost for words, really, yeah. Because how could they even think about it? It's just so crazy. Like, that was a crazy time. We'd get, like, this is a crazy time, I think, in the history of the world. But that was also an incredibly crazy time in the history of the world.
I often wonder now, though, see nuclear weapons now. I don't think anyone's actually ever going to use them. And like those North Koreans, those big missiles, they could be full of sawdust, couldn't they? You know,
look at that, just like look big at party blow. You know, like just, drop one and it's just all kind of like balloons and stuff. Like, we were only joking.
All these other countries are like start shooting their nuclear weapons, and you're like, oh, well, yours real.
Yeah,
we thought we were just messing about. Scared in case it rains, in case the poster paint comes off.
Don't even want to think about it. Yeah. Horrible thought. But so the moon didn't blow up, which is good.
No,
I think it's still there.
Tell you what it was, though. It was dangerous.
It was stupid.
Yeah.
That's what it was. It was a stupid idea. Yeah. It would have been dangerous if they decided to do it. But yeah, thank you very much.
No problem.
For your efforts.
Glad you enjoyed it.
I did.
Right, I think we'll call it a night there. We've done the socials. We've spoken about our good friends and Ouch, Was That a Ghost? And Killing 15 Minutes.
Yeah, cheers, guys.
Yeah, thanks for your support. So we'll leave it there, James.
I think that's probably best, to be honest.
It's been the most dangerous podcast, and it's, we call it Nuke the Moon.
Nuke the Moon, let's do that.
I'll come up with a better title.
Okay, good night. Thank you.
Thanks, James. Good night. Take care.
Liftoff will start in T-minus 10 seconds. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. We have ignition.